Good morning and welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for April 30th. The first item on our agenda is to review the items on the May 4th council meeting agenda. So council, hopefully you have that in front of you. The first couple of items is involves liquor licenses, at least agenda item 3. It's probably good to note that at least one of these is slightly different. The agenda item 3F for the Nile, there are certain recommendations. It is recommended for approval, but it's with a few stipulations that the applicant has to achieve before the license is issued. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that's agenda item 3. Mr. Richens.
3E, maybe you could walk us through 3. What's going on in 3E, too? Because that's her recommendation for denial. We don't see recommendations for denial that often.
Good point. So, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Councilmember Richens. On the Thai restaurant, that's the one you want to look at, was 3E?
Yes, sir.
We have not been able to reach them at all. So they've not paid their fees. We've tried to contact them by mail, phone. We even sent a representative out. No action at the restaurant. So we're just going to have to take and recommend denial, unless they come forward by now. But there's no contact with them.
Why is it even on the... I'm sorry. Why is it even on the...
They did. They sent the application to the state. They paid the fee to the state, but they haven't paid anything to us. So,
yeah, maybe we just take it off completely. And
well, we've tried for like 3 or 4 weeks.
I think we were just trying to. Sometimes we put it on just to give them the benefit of the doubt that maybe right. They'll come in at the last minute. But it may get. We may end up just pulling this.
We could, but we've had no contact. We've tried for 3 or 3 weeks to get a hold of them.
Yeah, so maybe better to pull it than to deny it.
We could.
Okay, what are the ramifications of a denial, though?
Well, actually, we really have. Well, I don't know if we really can pull it. I mean, they haven't asked us to pull it unless the council wants to. I guess they can, but the applicant hasn't asked for it to be pulled, so I don't know what they're planning on doing.
Well, I guess I have the same concern Mr. Richens has. If we're doing them a disservice by denying them, maybe their business plan has changed or they're having, you know, all the issues that can come up when you're starting a restaurant, maybe we just put it on a shelf, and if they get their ducks lined up, rather than being prejudiced by having their license denied, they can just re-engage in the process.
And what we would have to do is request a continuance from the state, which we can do, but they're only going to give so much time then, too, and then they're going to not do anything with it. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think what happens is this gets triggered by their application.
Correct.
With the state, not with us.
Correct.
And so that's what kind of puts it on our agenda in order to meet the time frames set by the state. But and it may be effectively by taking it off the agenda may be effectively denial anyway because our not acting.
If we take no action, then the state will take some action. So they'll take it from.
Why don't we'll look it over before the 4th. We may just end up taking it off the agenda of council's. If we get no response at all, maybe we'll just take it off as opposed to council taking a negative action on this.
We can do that.
All right. That seems a little more business friendly.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Maybe a little bit of clarity on the Nile. What's the expectation of the theater by the meeting day? What does the applicant for the, because to be able to maintain a recommendation of approval, they need to do something, take some action.
Correct. There was 3 things on that. They needed to either get the injunction lifted by the 4th. They either needed to demonstrate that they're not subject to that injunction and satisfy council that they're not subject to the injunction. I don't remember what the 3rd one was.
Or the business plan.
Or the business plan, correct. I'm sorry.
So what would we be looking for in that plan?
Whatever criteria that the council would want, but basically what we're looking for is pretty much a good neighbor policy that they need to. There were some stipulations in the injunction. I think that's what they were looking for.
Right.
Let me read those real quick.
You know, if is it a statement from their attorney about what their plan is to approach Maricopa County? I mean, is that part of it?
I think there's very specific
things. There was very specific things in the injunction that they have to meet. Excuse me. Or they have to prove something. I would say so they'd have to get something from the court or from the county that would state that they're not subject to that injunction.
Mayor, Council, I think effectively what we're trying to do is this applicant wants to move forward, but we have this injunction that's been in place for 2002. So, in effect, recognizing that even regardless of what the council does, that injunction still has to be resolved with the county.
With the county, correct.
But we thought, well, if they could at least show the council that they've complied or have a plan to comply with the condition. There are terms in the junction. It talks about some specific items that need to be identified. So we thought, well, if they could provide that, it's our way of helping them maybe also resolve their issue with the county at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I know their council members have worked with them, and others, other of the business organizations have worked with them. So maybe between all those people, they can get them where they need to be by Monday night.
Yeah, that's what we're trying. Yes, that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah, okay. Or they can ask for a continuance and we can move it.
Okay, so we're here to help.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, thanks.
So the three stipulations for approval all have to be accomplished by Monday night?
It's one of the three.
They're one of the three, Mayor.
One of the three?
Oh, one of the three.
Because they either if they can get the injunction removed, then we're fine, because that means they've obviously gone and persuaded or at least proved up to the county
Correct.
That they've met the conditions
I see.
That we're asking for also.
We just need to get the injunction removed one way or another before Monday night.
But they can bring in a plan to do so, and that
yes.
is sufficient as well.
We're not even, yeah, and we'll even, that's, thank you. Obviously, that'd be one of them to have the injunction removed, or at least a plan that shows us that they're meeting the expectations of the injunction.
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Richards, there's eight criteria that are listed in the injunction, and we would at least want to get something to that effect that shows how they're going to meet the eight plan that the injunction contains. So something to that effect, or as Tim pointed out, you know, getting the injunction lifted or arguing that it doesn't apply and getting somebody from the county to say that the injunction doesn't apply to this particular applicant.
Okay. But, yeah, because, I mean, just by way of, for our home viewers, the injunction's against the owners of the property, but not the current operator of the theater. Is that correct?
That sounds correct.
Okay. And it has some language in there about being in concert with the owners or something like that, too, so I don't know how that defines out.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, agenda item 4 has to do with the purchase contracts. And item 5 also has to do with some resolutions. I notice on agenda item 6, I know staff is ready with a presentation on 6E related to some questions Councilmember Richens raised the last time we talked about water rates, but I think we'll save that till the end of the, till after we go through the agenda. And then agenda item 7 has to do with the introduction of ordinances related to the massage parlor industry, and I think we're going to hear a presentation on that at the end of the agenda here. Anything on agenda item 8 and 9 has to do with some zoning cases, as does agenda item 10. Okay, why don't we circle back then, Mr. Brady. I think we're ready to hear a couple of staff presentations, if you've got, on the water rates and the massage parlor ordinance.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll first give an update, follow up some questions the council had regarding utility rates. So we'll present that first. Candace and Dan.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. As asked, we've come back with an update on residential water rates that we spoke to you about a couple weeks ago. This was in regards to the demand tiers that we presented and the question regarding the fixed cost or the service charge on the residentials. So we did want to clarify some of the information that was in the previous presentation. In the previous presentation, we had discussed a 36.3% number. That was the number, that was the percentage of revenue, the revenues received from the service charges as a percent of the total cost of the water system. So we want to make sure we're clarifying that was the total cost of the system, not just the fixed cost. So it was a 36 over the total cost. What that involves is a weighted number between both residential and commercial. So it's not just residential, it's on both. Residential accounts are where we have our volatility in our consumption. And so that's really where we've been spending the last few years kind of looking at that fixed rate or service charge against the volatility that we have in residential. As we look here, when we really look at residential water rates, about 52% of all of the revenue that we receive from residential accounts comes in as part of that service charge or that fixed cost versus the consumption amount or the variable cost on the accounts. So when we look at just residential, we're actually talking about a 52% number, not the 36% number. When we look at these were the tiers, demand tiers that we had proposed for 15-16. This was, again, as a reminder, this was year one of a 5-year phase-in plan. And this is where the tiers would be realigned for next year. If you look at the percentage of bill on our typical customer is that 7,000 gallons per month. Typical customer, almost 69% of their monthly bill is from the service charge or the fixed cost. So as we're looking at just the residential and don't take into account with the commercial, we really are up at that 50%, 70% kind of percentages when we're looking at fixed costs. Just as a reminder, these were the different types of demand or consumption patterns that we saw on our residential side. So these are users that look the same when it comes to their meter, three-quarter inch meter, but their consumption patterns are different. And when we take those consumption patterns and we look at what that causes as a demand on the actual system itself, this is a new graph for you. And this looks at our total capacity for treated water. And we look at our total capacity, these lines here, these colors, the green, the blue, yellow, the kind of gold, and the purple, represent those consumption patterns that we just looked at on the previous slide. And this is the actual water consumption that they have on an annual basis. So when you look at our typical customer down there on the bottom, that 7,000 to 8,000 gallons a month, their consumption is very stable over the course of the year. But when you look at the other demand tiers, tiers 2, 3, and 4 that we're proposing, you can see that their consumption that they demand in the summer causes us to have to size our infrastructure for that peak demand. If you look at all the red area there, the red area is then the excess capacity that we have sized for but do not have water flowing and therefore are not actually billing on that particular capacity. So all of the red is the excess capacity caused by tiers 2, 3, and 4. So when we looked at our proposed plan, that's why you have us, we're showing you that we want to realign those demand tiers to make sure that we're, those excess capacity is taken up by tiers 2, 3, and 4 and not being putting the burden on tier 1, which is our typical customer, which is more less volatile over the year.
And Candace, I think we should also note that, and then maybe Dan can help me with this, I believe, is that what we're seeing in new residential construction is a much lower usage on average and more of that constant kind of lower tier. So we, on the majority of new construction that we're seeing in the city, is that accurate?
Right, yeah. Mayor and Council, our new customers coming in on the residential side are using less water, so they may not be the 7, 8 and 10,000 gallons a month. They might be more on the order of 5. So we're selling more water, but our average user is using a little bit less, which brings down our average consumption per residence, if you will. So this is what we're trying to do with these rates. Again, trying to not overburden those low water users, but have the folks that have that discretionary water, if you will, and they're using more. We're having them pay for that portion of the untapped capacity that you know, we need to maintain.
I appreciate the time that you guys took to sit down with me, walk me through it, help me understand what we're trying to accomplish here. And I think we're on the right track. I feel convinced that it makes a lot of sense. I think one way to translate this is we build freeways for rush hour. And, you know, there's the people that aren't commuting shouldn't have to pay for the rush hour lanes is basically what they're saying with this water. You know, so they should pay for the lanes that they just travel in when they're not, you know. So it's really more sensitive to our average user across the, you know, the non-commuter, if you will. And so I really appreciate you guys walking me through it and showing me the math and how it all kind of calculates out. So I feel satisfied that we're on the right track with rates. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for helping us understand that. Next item on the agenda that we're going to preview for our Monday morning or Monday evening council meeting, I think, is 7A. Is that right, Mr.
Correct. Correct.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Mayor, Council, with me here this morning, I'm Deanna Cantrell. I know all of you, but with me this morning is Patty Tracy from the Prosecutor's Office and Tim Meyer from Tax and Licensing. So I just wanted to start out with just a little brief overview of how we got here today and why we're presenting a new ordinance. In early 2014, the police department started to look at the massage establishment ordinance because we had an inordinate amount of massage establishments in Mesa compared to other cities. And at the same time, a group of concerned citizens approached the city manager's office and requested a meeting, which we held. And they were concerned about the number of massage establishments as well, especially those that are operating illicitly. And so they presented to us a model policy called the Polaris Project. And we looked at that. We also started doing some research into other cities, Scottsdale, Phoenix, other municipalities here close to us, and looking at their massage establishment ordinance compared to ours, and what they were doing compared to what we were doing holistically, not just looking at the ordinance. And so we did our first draft in August of 2014. We held two community meetings. We partnered with the Hickey Foundation, Arizona Trust, several community members, stakeholders in the state that are combating human trafficking. We also partnered with the massage establishment industry, and then, of course, with our city stakeholders as well. And so we came up with an ordinance that we thought would be sufficient, but then we had two community meetings with our massage establishment owners and found out that we really needed to go back to the drawing board in order to make it work for everyone. And so we did. We went back to the drawing board, and what we came up with is the ordinance that I'll present to you now, and I really do think this is a model ordinance, as does Arizona Trust. Those involved in human trafficking, our citizens are very, very happy with it, as are the massage establishment owners. We had our last community meeting about 2 weeks ago, had very, very positive reception from them. They're quite happy with what we've come up with, and so I think it's met everybody's needs, including the police departments. So I won't go over all of the changes. Let's see. There's the overview, the slide I just went over, sorry. So I won't go over all the changes, but I broke them up from administrative to facility changes, criminal and civil, because it really is, it's a complete overhaul of the ordinance. We didn't just make minor changes. It is an absolutely brand new ordinance. We created a civil process that did not exist prior. We created criminal violations where before we didn't have some of those options. And so it is really a brand new ordinance. I'll talk mostly about the sticking points that we really had to work through with the industry in order to get here. The reporting requirements, that was really not an issue. The biggest thing on this slide here that was an issue for folks was eliminating the need to have a manager on duty. That required some issues for some of them as far as having to maybe hire more people, especially for sole proprietors or people that just didn't have a lot of employees. And the issue for us from the law enforcement side is that it created issues for Patty from the prosecution side of the house. It was very difficult to find responsible people that could be prosecuted because many of the owners of some of these establishments live out of state. And so finding the right person to cite for violations in an establishment was difficult for us. And so we had a requirement to have a manager on duty at all times. And if the manager was not on duty, the establishment could not operate. Well, if a manager had a sick child or anything like that and had to leave for a couple of hours, they had to close the business, which didn't work for folks. And you could see why. And so what we came up with is having a designated agent, which doesn't necessarily cost them any more money, but it gives us somebody that's responsible for the establishment. So it worked out. We don't have any other issues with that, and it was a good resolution for that. And if you have questions, just stop me anywhere along the way. So facility changes. We followed the new ordinance on convenience stores. Thank you, Patty. For visibility into the businesses. And that is really because we wanted to deter illegal activity and we wanted folks to be able to, folks passing by, including law enforcement, to be able to look into the business and see what was going on, to be able to see the transaction area, because it really does deter criminal activity if they know that they can be seen inside if they were doing a robbery or a homicide or anything like that. And we have had those happen at our massage establishments in the past. And so the visibility, we didn't really have any issues with that. The biggest one on this slide was the no massage behind locked doors. We ended up making some exemptions for sole proprietors or people that have massage establishments that have one room. So the first room you walk into is the actual room that you would have a massage in, Of course you want to have that behind a locked door because you don't want the public just walking in on you. And so what we did is we created an exemption for them, and we also created a way that they can have a locking mechanism that is coded with a code. That code would be provided to tax and licensing, and if law enforcement would like to do an inspection, then they get the code from tax and licensing. They can only use it during business hours, and we still would have to wait a reasonable amount of time before. We couldn't just unlock the door and walk in. We'd still knock, announce, and let people know what we're there for. And so that was the massage establishment industry was happy with that. That solution, and it works for us as law enforcement as well. It meets all of our needs. Criminal violations. So we created Kelly Gragan did a phenomenal job. She's not here today, but she did do a phenomenal job in drafting the ordinance, and she separated everything to where it's much more user-friendly. You as a reader, if you read over it, notice that it's probably a lot easier to follow. Before, violations were spread throughout the ordinance, and now they've been lumped into certain categories. So there are criminal violations. None of those are anything that is unreasonable. It's criminal to refuse an inspection, to conduct a massage on somebody that is exposed. None of those were really any kind of issue when we had our last meeting. Nothing was brought up by anybody that they thought was unreasonable about any of those violations. We did change the hours. Instead of being able to operate until midnight, establishments now have to conduct massages from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Massages have to be concluded by 10 p.m., but clients can remain on the premises until 10:30 because some establishments do classes. They teach some classes, and so they asked if clients could remain on the premises till 10:30, but massages would stop at 10, and everybody agreed that was fair, and so that's what we did. And then the civil violations, those are completely new. We created a new civil process, and we had to work with the prosecutor's office and, of course, law enforcement. So it will be, in essence, a citation, just like you would get for a civil traffic infraction. We would issue a citation for a litany of offenses that are outlined there in 512.17. I won't go over the process. It's a general process of going through tax and licensing. There were fines that were established. The fines are for a first offense is $250 fine. Second offense is $500. Third offense is $750. And those are all within an 18-month period. We moved the timing from 12 months to 18 months to give them a little more leeway, I guess, in having those offenses. Anything you want to talk about on that,
no,
Tim?
No, that sounds good.
On the civil violations? So really, we have, I think everybody's on board with the ordinance. So that concludes our presentation, unless you have questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kavanaugh and Mr. Thompson.
Thank you. By way of history, the Council's Public Safety Committee has been working with police department since 2008. On this issue, it was one of the top priorities of public safety for that time. We went through a similar process early on and making some significant changes, but we all know we learn from the process as it goes into effect. And I think this latest iteration is really a great product of cooperation among the industry, among prosecution, police department, in terms of ensuring that we have legitimate operations going on. And I think that this goes a very long way towards that goal and towards telling the bad guys, you know, these are the rules, you don't like them, you got to leave. And hopefully the bad guys will leave. But we're not going to have an adverse effect on the legitimate operations. And so just from a historical perspective, from serving the Public Safety Committee all that time, I just want to commend the group that has worked together so diligently on this. I want to thank the Hickey Foundation and the others who have worked with you. So I think city staff, you've done a very good job on this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Dan, this only applies to massage parlors, not like physical therapists and such like that. Because I know like there's some physical therapists or even chiropractors or doctors or what have you that do the massage therapy as part of your therapy. So do they fall under this guideline as well? Or is it just strictly...
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, they do not fall under this. There is an exemption for them. So anyone that's practicing within their license already is exempt from this code. So physical therapists, chiropractors, and anyone operating under a chiropractor would be exempt from this code.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. All right. Thank you. Mr. Finter.
Quick question. I hate to ask this. With the state legislature recently passing some legislation that prevents cities from enacting ordinances or doing things or further regulating businesses, is that going to affect this process at all?
Mayor, Councilmember Finter, currently there's no legislation or any discussion that I've heard about the state coming in and trying to regulate the massage establishment industry, but certainly that is a possibility if somebody wanted to go down there and lobby for a state regulation in the entire industry. But you know, we'd have to see what legislation they would propose to see if it would affect the city or not.
Actually, what I was referring to is I think they did a general catch-all recently in response to the convenience store ordinance, and maybe Mr. Bunker can...
Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, yes, the
legislation that you're referring to was specifically drafted to apply towards convenience stores and... Oh. And would not affect massage establishments. But even then, our interpretation has been that ordinance dealing with convenience stores only applies to non-charter cities, general law cities in the state. So that also will not be impacting the city of Mesa.
Okay, sorry, my mistake. When I read it, I thought that they were making it more broad, and so I appreciate just the clarification. The only other thing I'd like to say is, in his humble approach, Councilmember Kavanaugh, or Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, for years has been championing this cause and getting it through Public Safety Committee and others. And I appreciate his work. It was great to see. And there was somebody else on there, too, and I can't remember who it was. But boldly, Councilmember Kavanaugh has worked hard to make this city better in this area. So I appreciate his work and the work of the police department and others.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Council, if there's no other questions regarding Monday's agenda, we'll move on to the next item on our study session agenda, which is agenda item 2A, to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on fiscal year 15-16 budget for the following departments. So again, for those who are following the meeting at home, we are in the process of preparing our budget for next year, and doing so, we're hearing presentations from the various city departments regarding their budget requests and requirements. Today we have three departments. The first is Arts and Culture. Cindy Orenstein, nice to see you. Looking forward to hearing about Arts and Culture.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor and Council and Mr. Brady. Wonderful to see you this morning. Let me just get my notes up in front of me, and then we will start. We're very happy to talk to you about our budget for the 2015-16 year. And as you've seen in the other presentations, we'll be covering our major, just a handful of the many major accomplishments for this past year, some of the highlights and points of pride for the coming year, and also touching briefly on the impact of the budget reductions that occurred this coming year's budget. In terms of the accomplishments, I wanted to start with a resounding success that we're experiencing at the Idea Museum. As you know, they've gone through a branding change and have had significant growth in revenues, participation, and membership since the rebranding occurred in February of 2014. This is a chart that shows the trend line of consistently increasing participation. This is specifically participation or visits, attendance. Since the former Arizona Museum for Youth became the Idea Museum, the membership has grown tremendously with the addition of, and this is participation, but I wanted to add that membership has also increased in a corollary way. We've had a 45% increase in the 1 year from February to February in their membership, with a total as of the 1 year point of 2,556 member households, which is a record for, by far a record for them in the number of members, member households. And revenues have also risen significantly. You can see the trend. Again, the green line is the current year versus the prior year in the case of February, March, two prior years. There are some anomalies here. For instance, January, the year before, they were closed for most of it before the reopening. But most of them, you see that the trend line is consistent. And they produced about, they will have produced about 50,000 in additional earned revenues by the year end. While there are increased costs in providing customer service and materials and supplies for this higher visitorship, we anticipate that over time the new revenues will outpace the extra expenses. And so we'll see a consistently improving trend line, and it's very, very great success story for the city of Mesa. And while the museum was always interactive, it is now more so than ever. That was part of the rebranding. And it's part of a reason for the great success. Here you see Build It, the current exhibition around, which is looking at construction and architecture, which has 25 hands-on interactives in the exhibition, which is quite extraordinary and has been extremely well received by the public. At the Arizona Museum of Natural History, one of the highlights for this year is that just recently completed the successful installation of the new Dinosaur Mountain, featuring three new robotic dinosaurs. And these new robotic dinosaurs are courtesy of grants and contributions from the Mead Family Foundation and the Arizona Museum of Natural History Foundation, very generously. And they literally arrived on a slow boat from China and literally and got held up at port till the strike was settled. They've been installed on a renovated dinosaur mountain with the refurbishment done entirely by our own staff, by the museum's exhibition team. And the dinosaurs that previously lived on Dinosaur Mountain will be incorporated into a new exhibition that will basically create a dinosaur petting zoo experience, which we're really looking forward to, and we know the kids will enjoy. Now that
the
mountain is...
Have we explored the liability issues?
We'll file down their teeth. Now that the mountain is complete, the staff and volunteers can now really continue to finalize and complete another big project that's been underway that you've heard about, which is the facade renovation project that will feature a dinosaur breaking through the wall of the museum that will be visible from the light rail, and that will be completed in the coming fiscal year. At the Mesa Arts Center, there are a number of things we wanted to celebrate. In particular, the increased activation with pre-show food events, Free Fall Friday concerts, enhanced festivals, new spun chairs, which you'll see a picture of now, and also a pilot swing dance event we held recently based on Lincoln Center's Midsummer Night Swing kind of format that was extraordinarily successful. These are all activities that are designed to make the Mesa Arts Center fun, active, engaging, and a community gathering place, and we feel we've made tremendous slides in those directions. The spun chairs were purchased for the Spark Festival, but now they're a permanent fixture on our campus, and it's really fun to see them used a lot of the time, including by adults, which we love. We love seeing adults being willing to play on our campus. In the fall, we were extremely excited that we hosted our largest Dia de los Muertos festival ever with 16,000 visitors. In a wonderful collaboration with Mesa Association of Hispanic Citizens, Mesa Arts Center hosted the Latino Town Hall for the first time, which was a great success, and they plan to do it again next year. And it was held during Dia de los Muertos for a great community building and cross-fertilization opportunity. And so we were very, very pleased with that. Classical Music Inside Out, in its first year, This series is breaking down barriers to understanding and enjoying classical music with extraordinary illuminating performances and workshops in schools and community. The program this year, which had many, many residency activities, but I just wanted to mention two, it included a live streamed workshop delivered to schools electronically from ThinkSpot at Red Mountain Library, and thank you to Councilmember Luna for his support and encouragement in that, and also a wonderful performance. There was a great news story about it, a performance for patients at Cardin's Children's Hospital that was really quite special and extraordinary. Looking to ahead to 2015-16 and wanting to share some things that are coming, the Arts and Culture Department obviously has so much activity, so we'll just highlight a very few today. At the Idea Museum, we are celebrating the arrival of light rail to downtown Mesa with the exhibition Zoom Zoom, Trains and Planes. It will open in early October and run through late January and will give an added focal point to the fact that we're celebrating having our own Zoom Zoom trains running through downtown. The Museum of Natural History, we really want to look ahead with anticipation to what is going to be happening at Mesa Grande Cultural Park. Thanks to funding from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Tribe, Arizona Museum of Natural History will enhance programmatic offerings for student groups at Mesa Grande, increase access through assistance to Title I schools, and increase the organization's marketing of this wonderful historic site. Mesa Arts Center, we're just mentioning three points of pride for the coming year, the 10th year celebration, our growing Lincoln Center partnership, and some new interactive artwork that we will be installing that you've heard about before but will come to fruition. This is our 10-year celebration logo, and we will have many activities. The 10th year celebration will be a season-long series of fun events, monthly themed promotions, and many special activities. It will kick off with a two-week series of events, including a big public festival on the second Friday in September, featuring a new exhibition, the third time we've had a piece of the wonderful collection of Cheech Marin. We will, around that exhibition, hold a Latin street party themed festival, and we're so excited that we're going to have a free concert by superstar group Los Lonely Boys at that event, which is a big deal, and we're very pleased. Soon after, longtime partner Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra will conduct a four-day residency in Mesa, including two public performances and some other very, very special activities with Wynton Marsalis as, of course, the featured performer with Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and our great partner in our Jazz from A to Z education program. In terms of the Lincoln Center, we're building on our very long-term relationship with Jazz at Lincoln Center and with the assistance of some council members who've been working to forge this relationship, this stronger relationship. We're happy to be developing a partnership with Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts in New York. The first result is an exciting residency by Ballet Hispanico, a really fantastic dance troupe, including two performances and activities in schools and community as part of our two-week kickoff. A great community event that precedes the residency will have Ballet Hispanico dancers leading a Latin social dance experience on the Shadow Walk during the 10th year party, which will be a lot of fun. You may recall that we are developing the new interactive artwork as a feature of our creative placemaking project funded by Art Place America. During the Spark Festival, artists from Daily Tous les Jours in Montreal, the artists who are designing it, installed a prototype for the new interactive artwork. It was thoroughly enjoyed by visitors of all ages and will be the basis for refinements of a much larger space that will have an interactive artwork where you make music using your shadow to create musical sounds and other sounds, natural sounds, human sounds. Finally, the impact of budget adjustments. We addressed the requested cuts with a combination of expense reductions and increased revenue. So the on the reduction side, we cut $20,000 from the materials and supplies budget for the security contract, which was heavily underutilized. We were able to identify $68,000 in reductions in core MAC programs, but we kept them to four areas that would have the best ability to absorb them and the least impact on the public. So we cut those in areas of performing live campus operations, technical operations, and adult classes, most heavily in the area of delaying some purchases of small equipment and a slower rate of changeover in materials and supplies. But we do feel that the public will not really experience those cuts in any significant way. And then we did cut $42,000 from the Spark Festival. We are going to shorten it to 2 days, Friday and Saturday only, from the 4 days. But Wednesday and Thursday were only noon to 5 p.m., so the remaining part of the 2 days will encompass 65% of the hours of the festival remaining, and even a larger portion of the attendance of the event attending on the 2 days that are left, that remain. And on revenue increases, all of the increases are within the fee ranges approved by council previously. We are increasing studio class fees by just 25 cents per hour. It's a very small increase. It doesn't add up to more than a few dollars for most classes. We're able to provide extra revenue to the budget from the continued high visitation at Idea Museum. The trend line gives us confidence that we will be able to support the increase we've identified. And last year, Arizona Museum of Natural History raised the adult admission rate $1. At that time, we were able to hold off on raising the child rate. We waited. We didn't want to raise it yet. We knew it would come. But we are now implementing that $1 increase for the child admission rate. However, that only brings the child rate to $7, which is still well below market rates. We've done a comparison with other institutions that are similar to ours, and we're still below the market rate for the child admission. So we feel confident that that will be an acceptable increase. And again, it is within the approved rates. And that is my presentation. Happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Cindy. Mr. Cavanaugh.
In terms of use of the classroom space, how would you measure the success of partnerships with colleges such as Benedictine or others who utilize your space? Is that in neutral? Is it in a growth mode? How would you analyze that?
Well, we're very happy with their use of the space. In terms of whether that's increased or not, I'd like to ask my colleague, Rob Schultz, to come up. I'm not completely sure if we have increased that use.
Mayor, Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, no, the use has stayed flat the last year. So we're still working with Benedictine and their staff there to give them the opportunity to offer classes at the MAC. But they have their own internal restrictions, and their growth, I don't think, has the growth in their interest in our classes hasn't been on the upswing this year. Now, well, that may improve over the next couple of years, but we'll keep working on that.
And I believe it's just the drawing and painting classes that are...
And a ceramics class.
Oh, and a ceramics class that are using our studio. We're very happy. They're very happy with the relationship, but they're still very young, so you would expect that it would take a little time for that area of the program to grow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Your department is one of the big points of pride for our city, so thank you for the great job that you and all that help you are doing.
Actually, thank you so much, Mayor, for reminding me. I want to acknowledge that I do have the colleagues that are very much responsible for everything I've just reported to you in the audience today. Sunny O'Rourke, the director of the Idea Museum, Tom Wilson, director of Arizona Museum of Natural History, Randy Vogel, assistant director of MAC, and Rob Schultz, who you just saw, who is the assistant director of the department, and MAC are all here supporting me, as well as Terry Siggins, our budget manager. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
You bet. Nice job. Next item on the agenda is to hear from development and sustainability. Salonka. Nice
morning.
To have you here.
Mayor, Council, good morning. I'd like to present my staff real quickly. This is Pam Alexander. She's our fiscal analyst. I also have in the audience, as you know, we are a fairly eclectic department, cover a lot of different areas. So Steve Heather is here. He's our building official. I think he's holding up the back wall. At least he was. Perhaps he's gone now. he oversees the building permit area. We've also got Beth Hughes-Ornelas, who's here. She works a lot with the various departments, transportation, water resources, police and fire, to work on infrastructure for development projects. She's also over the permitting area. Laura Heineman handles the building inspectors as well as the code inspectors, and I know we spend a fair amount of time with all of you on that particular topic. And then Scott Boucher is here. He's our environmental and sustainability director, and we're going to talk a little bit about the very innovative efforts and the improvements that Scott's group has worked on. One of the major goals that we achieved this last year, and I forgot John Wesley over here is our planning director, who you all know. John and primarily Tom Ellsworth, who's one of our senior planners, have been working very hard over the last 2 to 3 years on updating City of Mesa's general plan. They held over 30 public meetings, were involved in public events, and that general plan was adopted by the voters in November. It really sets the playing field for the next 10, 15, 20 years. The goal of that plan was to increase flexibility in development projects, to provide more opportunities for developers to be more creative and responsive to market conditions. And it also really responds to council's direction to focus on increased quality of the built environment in Mesa. Another major area that the department focuses on is collaboration with economic development and bringing forward industrial jobs and high-paying, high-quality jobs. Two of the major expansions that we've worked on this year that we're very excited about, and I know most of council have been involved in, the Empire Southwest expansion, which actually started about 2 years ago, but we had the grand opening. I know the mayor, you were there on one of the wonderful tractors out in front. So,
thank you. At your suggestion, I appreciate
it. It was a great opportunity for you, sir, and we're glad you took us up on it.
Thank you.
Just a couple of months ago, we had the groundbreaking for the expansion of Specialty Devices, and that's a tremendous opportunity out there. They primarily work in the airbag inflator business and do just a phenomenal job. In addition to that, we've worked with economic development and with our development community. We've worked on over 300 special projects where we've worked with them on customized schedules to meet their demand for getting out of the ground, getting their certificates of occupancy, and that's been very successful. We basically talk to the developers, say, what do you need? When do you need your permits? And we have worked with them on that, on a basically customized review schedule. And, of course, we rolled out the self-certification pilot program in 14-15. It was kind of a soft rollout, and we will continue to promote that and emphasize it this coming year in 15-16. Just to give you a quick snapshot of development activity, we have continued to see a gradual increase in both residential and development activity in both commercial and residential. This graph shows the blue bars are the commercial projects, the red bar is the residential valuation, and then the green bar is actually the permit revenue. So we have continued to see a gradual increase over the last 5 years compared to where we were back in 2008, 2009. This next slide actually shows the construction valuation. This is important as far as tax base and those kinds of things. The blue bar is commercial activity. The two major spikes in 10-11 and then 13-14 really have to do with first, the first solar building, and then the conversion over to Sapphire Glass, and then the Apple application. The construction activity also includes the major subdivision component of large development. So when they go in, put in the infrastructure, the water lines, streets, that kind of thing, that's considered commercial activity. Then when they start selling houses, it's residential. And you'll see we continue to see an increase in residential development. Some of the major areas for that have been down in the Eastmark, the DMV area, but other developments throughout the city, including Adobe Meadows and Mountain Bridge, that has just consistently been building over the last several years. In our environmental area, one of the major programs that we have had that's actually a permit condition of our stormwater program, but also is a tremendous assistance to the public, is our household hazardous waste program. Scott Boucher and his team have continued to improve that, and over this last year, we have seen a record number of participants. We hold four events a year, two on the east side, two up at Center Street. If any of you happened to pass Center Street a couple of weeks ago, we had the highest number of participants in that household hazardous waste event that we've ever had up there. One of the really neat things about that, we collaborate very closely with the Solid Waste Management Group, and we have the paint reuse program. We collect an awful lot of latex paint. They bulk it, they filter it, and then we provide it at no cost to our residents. So that's really a great program. And this just is a graph going back from 2004-05 showing the just astronomical increase in the participation rate in the household hazardous event. Household hazardous waste program. One of the areas that we have talked to council about over the last several years, and as you know, we struggled with, is code compliance. Several years ago, there were major cuts to that program, and Laura Heineman has worked very closely with neighborhoods, with council, with the police department, fire department, neighborhood outreach to do as much as we possibly can with the code officers that we have. We have two code officers that are funded by the Community Development Block Grant Program, and I've got a slide here showing you the areas they work in. We have seven officers that work then throughout the city in the non-CDBG areas. Again, as you may recall, earlier this year we were authorized two additional code officer positions in the general fund areas, and the expectation there is that we will increase work with the police department, fire department on focused areas. We continue to work with West Mesa CDC, leveraging our resources with theirs for voluntary compliance. So they take the lead and work with the folks in their area on voluntary compliance with primarily property maintenance issues. If they can't get voluntary compliance, then it moves over to the city for enforcement action. One of the areas that Laura is also working on that we just seem to have a significant increase is unsafe buildings. And so we have been working very closely with the police department, the fire department, our building official, to try to figure out creative ways to deal with those unsafe buildings, whether it's because of criminal activity or they're vacant or lack of residents maintaining their properties. So this is the map, or it was the map, showing the tan areas are the CDBG areas, the low to moderate income areas. That's where we have two code officers that work exclusively in those areas, and then the other seven officers are spread throughout the city. Technology is one of my major focus areas. We currently have an approximately 12-year outdated, unsupported, lousy, unuser-friendly, and horrible permitting system called Tidemark. So we were able this last year to get approval to replace that. Sorry, have a little bit of personal perspective on that one. We actually established a 4% technology fee several years ago, back in about 2007. That's a 4% technology fee that's added to every development permit, and that technology fee exclusively is funding the Tidemark replacement system. So that we went through an extensive request for proposal evaluation process in collaboration with our ITD group. This last year, we awarded the contract. The product is called Automation. Acela is the vendor, so we had a citywide kickoff in March of this year, and we are spending a tremendous amount of time right now working with the vendor on designing the new system. We expect that will go live. Actually, it has to go live under contract by early 2016. One of the early wins that we're really hoping for is electronic plan review. I've been talking about that ad nauseum probably for the last 5 years or so. That is an integral part of the automation product, but what we're trying to do is work with the vendor to see if we can't get electronic plan review started early, to have an early win. We really have, most of the development community would love to see electronic plan review. They wouldn't have to come down and look at us, sir. They would never have to come down to the city. They could submit their plans electronically from anywhere in the world, really. So we're really hoping that we can get that started. The other two things that I really wanted to emphasize, and this is thanks to Jill Kotzer and our staff, our Planning and Zoning Board have gone electronic on their agendas. So they're using Legistar for planning and zoning agendas. They went live this month in April. And John, I don't think they really had any problems at all. John and ITD worked very closely with them and Jill to get them used to electronic reviews. So no more hard copy packets for those folks. We're planning within the next couple of months to have the Board of Adjustment on Legistar also, so that they also no longer get hard copy packets and just use the electronic agendas the same way council does. So we're very excited about that. One of the areas I mentioned, Scott Boucher's group on energy efficiency, one of our...
Christine, quickly, yes, quite before we leave that slide, just go back. We went through it real quickly there. But if we get electronic plan review, council, what that means is it doesn't matter whether we're open on Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, whether we're open at 10 o'clock at night, regardless. Our goal is to make it so that they can submit. We said call it plan, e-plan review, but it's also they can submit their plan,
yes,
at any time, regardless of the hours that we have over in the offices of development services. So really think that's really the answer, electronic submittal. Frankly, we think that the day of sitting in front of a clerk, you know, you can still have that customer service experience, but for most reviewers, being able just to submit their plan, get it in, get the first comments,
yes,
from the plan reviewer can happen without, you know, it can happen all electronically from their offices at any time of the hour. So that's where we're headed. So thank you. I just want to make sure that was clear.
And I think, John, you've already been asking your applicants to submit their projects electronically for quite a while now, and that's been working. Yeah. Just the other piece of that on electronic plan review, obviously, you know, in the old days, you'd go and you'd see somebody sitting with massive rolls of paper. That's becoming a real problem for us. So we're actually playing with the hardware, looking at different size monitors, different types of interactive devices, so that our hope is on the electronic plan review, we can have a planner sitting in the office working on a set of plans, be talking to an engineer in New Jersey, Texas, any place, and have that interactive experience real time to say, well, you know, this ADA bathroom needs to be larger, and it really would reduce the amount of time from, you know, writing up the comments, sending them back, having them print off new sets of paper, and bringing it in. So we're very excited about that.
Christine, are you also going to get a scanner so you can scan some of those documents instead of having to archive all those rolls of plans?
That's a great question. We have been working diligently over the last 3 to 4 years. There is an incredible backlog of plans, going all the way back to microfiche, if you can believe that, where we use a creative approach of interns, temporary workers, volunteers, to scan in. We started with the planning projects, or the planning projects, I guess, and we're, I think, going to be close to finishing those up by the end of the calendar year-ish. It's a huge effort, and then we'll move on to the very large mass of paper that we have for the building plan review. One of our issues is just real estate, quite frankly. We're out of room on having enough space to keep those massive rolls of paper. So eventually, that's where we'd like to get to, quite frankly. It's a slow process. What we found is that the quality control is huge. You really need to have somebody that understands what they're scanning to make sure we get high quality in so we can get high quality out. Yeah, so we're continuing to work on that. As far as moving on to the energy savings that the Scott Boucher has been overseeing, over the last several years, we've had a tremendous focus on looking at energy efficiency savings for city buildings, installation of solar and water conservation. Just to give you an estimate of the savings that have been realized, this year we're looking at between $320,000 and $340,000 per year in energy savings for city buildings, approximately $6,000 in savings associated with water conservation projects. And the solar has really been a major initiative. The city has realized just under $6 million of solar installations through the use of contracting with the solar industry. Those installations have been at no cost to the city, and we're anticipating approximately $64,000 in energy savings. Those solar facilities have been at the new police stations, the fire stations, the libraries, and at the multi-gen center. One of the wonderful consequences of that is that they're solar structures, but they actually provide covered parking for both the public and the employees, so that's a great benefit there. On grants also, the sustainability folks have been very aggressive this past year. They've received over $500,000 in grants for sustainability initiatives. Emphasis areas for 15-16, I sound like a broken record, but we're really excited about our permitting system. It's called the Development Information Management Enterprise System. It's really a city-wide application that the vast majority of departments will be able to utilize. It will improve, again, efficiencies both for city staff and also one of our major goals is for the development community, that the system will be much more transparent. It will be much more user-friendly, both for professional architects and engineers, as well as mom and pop trying to find what the status of a code case is. So the citizen access port is really a critical piece of that. Again, as I already talked about, the electronic plan review, we are really working towards an early implementation of that rather than waiting until January of 2016. So we're committed to doing that. And then the whole system will go live no later than April of 2016. We also are working to expand the self-certification program. Again, we've had kind of a soft rollout on that, but we're really working with the development community. Basically just mimic the Phoenix program on self-certification. If an applicant, an engineer, architect is in the Phoenix program, they've been through 3 days of training. We spend a limited amount of time with them, just telling them what's different about the MESA program, but we're hoping to really expand that. We also have two new code officers, as I explained, that we were allowed mid-year adjustments on those. So we're anticipating that those non-CDBG-funded officers will be able to have smaller service areas, basically, in the rest of the city, and they'll provide more proactive and hopefully reduce the response times because we are so under-resourced in that area. In 15-16, also one of our major areas of focus is working with council on the urban transformation of downtown. We're focused on establishing public-private partnerships for reuse or new use. Again, the sustainability group is working with engineering on establishing low-impact development standards in the city. And then we're also working in collaboration with Energy Resources on seeing whether or not a downtown solar district would be possible. Our land development areas, yes, sir.
I'm sorry, Christina, can you explain a little bit about what is low-impact development standards? I didn't quite understand that.
Scott, did you want to come up and talk about that?
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Low-impact development is a term that's used by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. It's really the beneficial use of stormwater. If you look around like southern, the Fiesta District in Southern Avenue, the work that's done there with some curb cuts that collect water off of the street and then use it in vegetated areas. Also a good example of it, of what we're trying to do in the downtown area, is if you go in front of the Mesa Urban Garden, there's a project that we did there. It's one of the grants that we received this year. Christine had pointed out the the grants that Development and Sustainability has received. It's a grant that we received and did some work in front of the Mesa Urban Garden that you can see changes to First Avenue where you're providing curb cuts and vegetated areas. What it can do is helps with aesthetics. It helps environmentally, but it also helps with aesthetics in streetscaping and can provide shade so that you have more walkable areas for residents as they're going from place to place.
So, Mayor, Council, we're actually planning on bringing that to the SAT committee to kind of go through the specific standards. We'd like to kind of begin kind of incorporating that in some of our design concepts going forward. So that's just an item we mentioned here, but we want to bring it to the committee and then bring it to the full council.
Great. Thank you.
Right. And that's actually, Scott and Jeff McVeigh have been working on that for probably about the last year. It's been very successful. They've done presentations here in the East Valley. Just last week, they did a major presentation in the West Valley. They've been working with the Arizona State University School of Sustainability on that. So they're sort of kind of rock stars in the low-impact development business these days. Let's see. One of our major areas, sort of a key functional area of the department, is the land development process, obviously. We continue to try to find ways to be as responsive as we possibly can to the development community. Typically, time is money, so folks want a quicker turnaround time to get their plans reviewed. As I mentioned earlier in 1415, we've been offering the customized review schedule for several years. Works particularly well for large projects that are very complex to try to get them through the permitting process and get them out of the ground based on their needs. One of the ways that we have met that demand over the last several years, because we've had such a significant reduction in staff, is the use of temporary contract workers. When we have an increase in the workload, or if we have a particular project that comes in that they need a quick turnaround, we have the ability to bring temporary workers in to meet that temporary demand. So we're not adding FTEs to do that. And that's been extremely effective as we've continued to see the development activity grow. We use those temp workers not only in the entitlement area in John's area, permitting significantly, and then also in building inspections. The budget impacts that we have proposed for 15-16, we are proposing eliminating one administrative support assistant two position in the planning area. That'll save us just over $54,000. We did take a reduction in the temporary staffing. However, the way we manage that, if we see an increase in revenues and we see an increase in demand, we really try to keep that group right size. So if we have a huge need to bring temporary services in, if we've got the revenues, we can deal with it. We also moved one energy and water conservation coordinator from the general fund to the environmental fee, so that was a savings to the general fund of approximately $88,000. Any questions?
Council? Yes, Mr. Thompson.
What does the administrative support assistant to, what does that person do?
I'll let John answer that if you'd like to.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, that admin support assistant position was in the planning division. It helped a lot with the processing of applications as they come in the early stages with primarily the pre-submittals, getting them out to the review agencies and coordinating that response. It also worked closely with our Historic Preservation Board to do those agendas and minutes and carry the logistics of that particular function.
So we're not going to, you don't think we're going to see any type of hiccups in the system as far as slowdowns in the process or anything like that?
Mayor, Councilmember, anytime you lose a person, there's always some impact of that. But we have been working with the staff that's there to redirect that workload. Some of the temporary staff we have helping with the scanning project, we have trained them as backup as needed to fill in when we might have extra workload demands.
Perfect.
Pam's group also has all of our administrative staff are for the most part centralized in the department. So she's been working closely with John to try to make sure that we don't have any hiccups. But quite frankly, it is a lost position there, just really helping to keep things running. So we're doing everything that we can to try to absorb that across the department.
But it is a vacant position, correct?
Yeah. Yes, it is a vacant position right
now.
We're
not laying someone off. It has been vacant.
Right.
Mr. Richards.
Are we planning later in our budget presentations to talk about the
environmental fee and where that will be set for the fiscal year? Because I know we evaluate that annually.
Yes, we can do that. We can do that in our, I think we have a summary coming up, so we can do that. We're not at, at this time, we weren't proposing any increases, but we can show you what's included that's funded by that environmental fee.
I just wanted to understand the nexus between this energy water conservation corridor
sure.
position funded
yeah,
in the.
Absolutely.
I don't know that we've had staff folks funded out of the environmental fee before.
We have, yes, we do have a few, yes.
Okay, okay.
But yeah. we, let's, why don't we bring you that summary?
Yeah, we usually evaluate it annually,
okay.
so
we can do
when
that.
We get to that point, we'll
okay.
talk about it.
No, we'll probably do that here pretty quickly.
Good.
Okay,
right, thank you.
Actually, most of the basic environmental compliance activities in Scott Boucher's area, the staff, number of those positions that do environmental compliance are funded by the environmental fee.
So, yeah, no, once I asked that question, I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. So
yeah, it also, and I won't start that presentation now, but it funds.
We'll bring you
I'll be quiet.
You know, part of me wants to start one of those 1980s movies, Slow Applauses, you know, that builds to the crescendo. You know, because you guys are doing such a great job. It's really neat to see achieving some of the goals that you set out. And I know it's been a long journey and a lot of growing pains, and I want to commend your team for the progress that you've made. Well done.
Thank you.
Christine, I think, you know, I rely heavily on you to make me look good at...
particularly in the tractor.
Yes, thank you. But the State of the City addresses, you know, a good part of what I talk about is bragging about what you do. So I thank you for delivering on the self-certification this year so
yes,
I can
sir.
Talk about that at State of the City. I want you to know, though, a couple of weeks ago I went to Mayor Stanton's State of the City address, and I was very envious when he announced that they had 24/7 electronic plan submission and review. So my goal is to brag about that next January, and it sounds like we're on track. So
I have been trying to get that going for a while now.
I know you have.
The state of the technology, quite frankly, I think by waiting probably helped because it's the development community does everything electronically now. When we first started talking about it about 5 years ago, we still had some folks that were a little bit skeptical, but everybody uses it now, and we're all so used to doing everything 24/7 that I am really hoping that within, I'm not going to give you a time frame or I'll get in trouble,
okay.
but I am committed to making that an early win.
Great. Well, just so you know, I've already written the speech.
Okay. Well, just give me the date and I'll make sure it happens.
Yeah. January of next year.
Oh, I would like it to happen before that, at least on a pilot.
Happen by January.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Okay, that's all.
Just yesterday, I was riding up the elevator with this nice woman from engineering, and I thought she was going to tip over because she had arms like this with plans in it, and we both commented that electronic plan review can't come too early, and I know you're working at it, but thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, I think it was probably like January, February, where Councilmember Luna and I were having breakfast with Jackson Mole, talking about a whole separate issue that one of his developers was experiencing. And after the end of the discussion, we said, well, what is it that other cities are doing that Mesa could be doing better? And he said, you know, it'd be nice if you guys had electronic plan reviews. And that's when I came back and I was like, where are we at? And you're like, well, actually, we just bought. And I was like, awesome. And, you know, but the one thing that I'm proud of also is the fact that you utilized a 4% fee that you implemented on the developers. And the developers that I've talked to are happy to pay that 4% fee knowing that it's going to benefit them. And so I was proud that you went that way because that was one of my biggest concerns was where are we getting the money for this? And you were able to implement a fee that paid for this by the users that are going to be using it, and they couldn't be happier.
Great. We actually implemented that, again, back in about 2007. We still have a developers advisory forum. We meet with them approximately quarterly. Mr. Moll is almost always there representing the home builder community. And we presented that idea to them first before we came to council, quite frankly, back then, say, you know, are you interested in doing this and explaining, you know, they're frustrated with the permitting system. So they were unanimously in favor of doing it and have not ever had any complaints about it. And they're very pleased that we're getting it moving right. forward finally.
And I think it's going to eliminate a lot of the issues that we've had in the past with permitting and the time frames and complaints that I've heard.
Well, if someone says I can't come in on a certain day or time, then there's not
this they can happen anytime. They can do it in their pajamas on Absolutely. Saturday morning if they want. So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's great. Great.
Thank you, Christine.
Okay.
We appreciate
Thank
all
you.
You're doing. Thank you very much. The next item is Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities. Mr. Hirschberg, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Jump in and start. We'll talk about some of our accomplishments over the 2014-15 fiscal year. In the Parks and Recreation Bond Program project update, again, in the Parks Conversion and Improvement Projects, Desert Trails Park was completed in November of 2014, Mariposa Park in March 2015. In the Park Renovation and Enhancement Projects, we replaced 106 ball field light poles and lights at 25 different fields. Playgrounds were replaced at Porter Park in April, Vista Monterey in October 2014, Pequeño in November 2014, and Emerald Park in December 2014. Mesa Aquatics Complex is scheduled to open on May 23rd. We made significant irrigation improvements to for better efficiency and water conservation at Candlelight Park and Sherwood Park, and our new sign package installation is ongoing throughout the park system. In the community partnership project category, I'm pleased to report on Tuesday, the Mesa Public Schools Governing Board approved the agreements to transfer the former Mesa Junior High property in Powell High Fields to the city for redevelopment into community parks and recreation projects, and we'll be bringing those to you shortly for your approval.
Okay, hold on, Mark. Stop right there. Mayor, we have to, this is significant for us that these agreements have been completed. Mr. Finter, as you, Mr. Glover also. I just want to express some appreciation to the school district for hanging on, sticking with us to get these agreements in place. But I really want to thank Alfred and Mark because they've really stuck it out and worked through this. Alfred's been a hero in this and getting this done. So I just want to recognize him. These are not always that easy to do, and we understand there's a lot of sensitivities, but I think for our community wins on this one because now we can repurpose school property for parks that the community will enjoy in the long term. So I just wanted to express my appreciation to the school district, but recognize the work of Alfred and Mark because they really have done a remarkable job in getting this done. So
thank you. And just in case anyone at home is curious to know what we're talking about, Mesa Junior High School was decommissioned by the school district and is now transitioning to the city, will be used as a park. And the same is true for Powell Junior High School, correct? So,
the mayor, from now on, I think as of this date, we'll make sure I get this right. Mesa Junior High will be known as Eagles Park, mm-hmm. and Powell will be known as
Fiesta Sports Park.
So that's, we're kind of making that transition also.
Great. Thank you.
Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Luna.
Just a quick building on the Eagle Park. Will we maintain the buildings? Will that be...
The school district is going... Do you want to go ahead? There's some legislation that took place in this session as well that's forcing us to move quicker on the buildings. The gymnasium is the building that's the most usable and can be used back and turned back in relatively easily for community use. So we're going to take the gymnasium and the associated locker room building there and work on repurposing that building to turn that into a community center type usage and allow that. The buildings, Alfred, I'll defer to you on the legislation there and where we're headed.
Mayor and Council, excuse me, there was legislation that was just passed in this recent session that required if we were going to take any buildings on school property after July 3rd, which would be the effective date of the legislation, we would have to attempt to pay, or the school district would have to attempt to get fair market value for that property. So there's still a discussion stage, but in respect to the what we call the excluded buildings, the additional buildings that are on the premises, we have a six-month window within the agreement to determine whether or not we're going to take those buildings, or if we don't take the buildings, then our requirement is to notify the district that we don't want the buildings, and then they will be demolishing the buildings at their sole cost. We won't have to pay anything. So that's still something I think we're ascertaining right now as to whether or not we want those buildings to be kept in our inventory.
And those remaining buildings are the auditorium, library, and the cafeteria. So,
So, again, just for the public that might be watching, can you tease us a little bit? What's going to happen with the Mesa Junior site? Is it going to be soccer fields or something other than that? Mm-hmm. And at the Powell site, I know, aren't there some funds available to do exciting things there as well?
Yeah, Mayor. At Eagles Park, we'll be looking at doing a couple things, a win-win for the community in several ways. Again, I mentioned the gym repurposing into a community center type use. The fields will also serve as much-needed retention for that area as well to help relieve some of the rainfall and other situations that have occurred over the last couple of years. We'll use those into multi-purpose fields. So we always start with soccer fields just because it's the largest field out there. But then again, we can use those for different sports and sporting activities out there. In addition, the community was very adamant that they wanted to see walking and jogging trails, as well as fitness equipment that has become pretty popular in a lot of our parks. So we'll install those, as well as a brand new playground as well for the community to use too. At Fiesta Sports Park, we'll use the Quail Run baseball field model there and duplicate that at Fiesta Sports Park. So it'll be four baseball fields and softball fields.
Is there some funding from the Diamondbacks to help with that?
We are working on finalizing an arrangement with the Cubs the Mesa Hohokams to brand that facility with as Little Cubs Park, Little Sloan Park. So we're working on finalizing those agreements as well as the school district. Since that's moving forward, we'll reengage the Cubs Charity Foundation and the Mesa Hohokams in that project as well. Should also mention that we are keeping the lights, keeping the track at Powell as well. The community was expressed a lot of interest in maintaining the track there, as well as the playing field in the center of the track, and we'll be lighting that area so it can actually get more use throughout the year.
Very cool. All right. Thank you. I know we interrupted you on your...
No problem. Just jumping back in, the projects outside of the pond program that we completed were the Riverview Soccer Complex, Sagebrush Park, City View Park, and an additional land purchase for future cemetery expansion. We just completed the landscaping to match along Country Club to match the rest of the property there.
I'm sorry. I always like to know more about the cemetery. I get this product of my age, I guess. Remind me, I know we're running out of space, and we just added some, is what you just told me. Is there also some additional space that's going to come available as the radio tower leases expire?
I actually have that in here about two slides up. Can jump in there now if you'd like, or I can...
No, I'll be patient. Thank you.
Don't make him wait.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Our facility and program utilization continues to increase and remain consistent. Programs utilization continues to increase. Our facility utilization remains consistent. Last year, we implemented a new registration reservation system, much easier for the community and the public to use, and that's attributed to a lot of that, much easier to browse and search for classes as well as go through the registration process. But our swim lessons operated at nearly 90% capacity. Our recreation centers had more than 279,000 visits. Over 51,000 rounds of golf were played at Dobson Ranch Golf Course. The Convention Center hosted 688 events attended by over 175,000 people. The Mesa Amp hosted 7 concerts plus Celebration of Freedom and Wingstock. The cemetery sold an additional 275 plots. Over 1,500 participants in our adaptive recreation programs. 1,200 youth participated in 67 different youth sports programs that we offer. Over 18,000 people took the time to celebrate Mesa at Pioneer Park in the spring and Red Mountain Park in the fall. And over 1,000 kids took part in our summer camp program. Spring training, I think you were all witness to that this season and the tremendous success we had. We completed, as you know, the remodeling of Hohokam Stadium and Fitch Training Complex for the A's. They had 110,000, just slightly more than 110,000 fans in attendance. 7,337 fans average compared to their previous home at Phoenix Muni. They had 5,201 fans. So they're extremely pleased with the increase and great comments from the fans that attended there. Our second season for the Cubs at the renamed Sloan Park. they again broke their own record of a Cactus League record with 222,415 fans in attendance. Last year we averaged 14,254, which was a Cactus League record at the time. And this year they averaged 14,828. So the Cubs have four of the top five all-time season attendance records and own all top 20 single game attendance records in the Cactus League. Again, we're trying to continue to put our best foot forward. This past year, we were recognized as a National Gold Medalist finalist for excellence in parks and recreation management for community. We are one of four finalists in communities with populations of 450,000 and above. We continue to maintain our national accreditation by the Commission for Accreditation of Parks and Recreation Agencies. Our fifth consecutive year is a Playful City USA. Ongoing implementation of our strategic plan. We just completed year three of the of four in hosting the very successful Arena Pro Swim Series at Skyline Aquatic Center, and we're one of six communities in the country to host that event. And coming up on May 13th through the 17th, we will again host the Desert Challenge Games in conjunction with our partners at Arizona Disabled Sports. This is an international Paralympic Grand Prix event, and the only North American event that's recognized as such. So this is an Olympic qualifier, Paralympic qualifier for several of those athletes. The only other host countries that have these Grand Prix events are Dubai, Australia, Brazil, Tunisia, Italy, China, Switzerland, and Germany. So we're in good company with that group there. Again, with the quality and location of our venues, we continue to attract a number of special events and tournaments that have been previously held in other parts of the Valley or other parts of the Southwest. Moving forward into the next Mesa, we's planning for expansion at the cemetery. So,
man,
the Northview area, the Northview area opened in November 2012, which provided us an additional 1,458 plots. At that time, it took our inventory just under 3,000. Our current inventory is back down, right around 1,100 plots that are available. Next year, we will start design and expansion, working with the radio station that has the tower there now. As that lease expires, we'll work on design and expansion of that 5.5-acre property. We believe at build out there, that'll provide us with an additional 4,500 plots, which we anticipate will be sufficient to get us through the mid-2030s.
Yes, Mr. Venter.
I didn't know if you were finished there. I would love to have you bring to audit, finance, and enterprise, since this is one of the city's enterprises, kind of an overview, and then maybe get some feedback on the cemetery. You know, we laugh on the mayor, but there's several of us that have family members buried there mm-hmm. at the cemetery, and we get a lot of feedback about what goes on there, everything from monument sizes to other things. And I think it'd be great. I haven't seen it in the past, but have it come through committee and kind of share the plans. There's been some great things that you're doing there, and I'd love to have some input on some of those expansions and how we do some of the things there. So that would be an observation for me.
Thank you. I'll be in the audience when you have that. I'm anxious to know more.
Certainly, Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, we'll work with you to schedule that accordingly. Continuing to invest in some of our aging infrastructure, we will focus on pool resurfacing at Carson and Shepherd. The last of the wood light poles and lights will be replaced at Gene Autry Park baseball fields in July of this year. Convention Center heating, ventilation, and air conditioning updates for better efficiency and control will take place this summer. Convention Center restroom remodeling, the rest of those will be completed in June and July. The Dobson Ranch Golf Course, we're about to start in the next few weeks here, a substantial lake edge and canal banks restoration project, which will help secure those banks from future erosion. And then with those, I talked about spring training a little bit. We're planning for the future based on our agreements and those facility use agreements and starting to establish restricted fund accounts now so that we can prepare for the future as those capital improvements that are called out in the facility use agreements with both teams can be scheduled and replaced. So we'll continue to add a little bit there so we're not caught off guard and looking for large dollars at one time. The bond project will continue development there. Desert Arroyo Park is under construction now, when we look forward to opening that in early August. Pioneer Park. We're moving forward with the contracts and design there, and again focusing on the north side of the property there to increase activity. We talked a little bit about Fiesta Sports Park and Eagles Park. We'll continue to move those forward. We have playground replacements scheduled at Gene Autry Park, Rancho Del Mar Park, and Dobson Ranch Park. We're looking forward to that park. We're focused on creating a boundless playground, 100% accessible for all members of the community. So that'll be a special project for Mesa. Again, we'll continue to focus on making irrigation improvements for better efficiency at Fitch, Meadow Green, Wood Glen, and Harmony Parks, and in continuing to implement technology for improved efficiency. We're implementing it as we speak of a new cemetery software management system. We just are getting ready to kick off installation of a new event booking and management software for the Convention Center and Amphitheater, and we're doing that in conjunction with the Mesa Arts Center. We are appreciative of ITD and their efforts in helping us create connectivity at Fremont, Shepherd, Carson, Brimhall, and Stapley Aquatic Complexes. So it allows for implementation of our activity and registration system for better cash control and auditing. And again, continuing to enhance our active registration software for improved customer service and to increase those online transactions. In looking at the department's budget reductions, our 5% reduction totaled $1,384,153. $312,153 of that is coming from the general fund. And looking at various budgetary items, reducing advertising, printing, rental equipment, our temporary services, and some of the professional services that have been used in the past. And the biggest one with a savings of $1,072,000 in just O&M dollars is delay of some of these projects, the bond projects. So some of it was necessitated just on the delay of property acquisition, so it played into that as well with Eagles and Fiesta in particular. But again, you see Monterey, Greenfield, Signal Butte, and Elliott property. Just bumping those out a little bit to, creates a projected savings of over $1 million.
Mr. Fenter.
So I have some concerns in this area. I don't want to hash them out here. I think maybe I'll meet with the city manager and yourself on kind of how they've been bumped out in timelines and who gets what. And I don't want to seem parochial, but I am. That's what they hired me to do. So. If we can maybe work it out later. It just kind of some concerns along those lines.
Okay.
And with that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Mark, I'm just struck by the... You're also one of the big points of pride that we have. I think we really... belabor this, but we were one of the finalists for the Parks and Rec Department of the Year for large cities of over 400,000. I think we finished a close second to Chicago, and I think we'll beat them this year now that we got the mountain bike park and a few other big wins under our belt. So thanks for the great job you're doing. I'm just struck by the fact that all of the departments are coming in and talking about reductions, but at the same time, the attitude is that we have to do more with less. We're not taking down expectations at all, or we're not thinking that we're going to achieve any less. We are all focused on doing more. So I appreciate that in all of the presentations, and particularly the one that you just concluded. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor.
Council, any other questions? Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Thompson.
Statement. There are several of us that, Mayor, I think you went as well to the arena swim meet, Arena Pro. And I had a chance to talk to one of the organizers there, and they absolutely loved the venue. Said as far as they are concerned, they would enjoy coming back here year after year for the next however long they want to do this and however long we'll keep them in there. So kudos to you and your team for getting that into Mesa, and hopefully it'll be a mainstay.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, thank you. Yes, USA Swimming has indicated that they're eager to enter into another four-year agreement to continue to host that site. And a tribute to that is it's of those Grand Prix events, this is the only outdoor event. And it for a lot of those athletes, it takes them, I think, back to their childhood and at the beginning of when they started in their neighborhood swim teams. And the athletes love coming out. It's I think I mentioned to you over that weekend that it's great to see the national Mesa in the national spotlight and those athletes tweeting and ESPN talking about their accomplishments and those bylines and the articles, everything starting with Mesa. So a great success.
Perhaps not coincidentally, Michael Phelps announced that he's moving to the Valley now after participating in that event just a week or two ago. So. Yep.
Great.
A lot of.
Let the police know. I'm sorry,
turn out loud. Turn off that microphone right now. Channel 11 will edit that out, I'm sure, later. Mr. Finter.
Since we're talking about aquatics, it isn't here in any of the pictures or anything, PowerPoint, but there's some talk about cutting back hours of the pools in the summertime. Maybe you could tell a little bit about that. And then my question would be, is there an opportunity to adjust some of the fees that we charge so we get the maximum, especially since we're opening a brand new pool? Some people might say, well, that's kind of crazy. You spend millions of dollars to build a pool, and then we reduce the hours so we can't use it. So I don't know. Is there some opportunities there?
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Finner, it's not a reduction. We're on the same schedule we've been. The struggle we have, so this year the pools open May 23rd, and they'll remain open through July 26th, which is the way it's been historically. What's making it more of an impact on the community is the school dates, and they're changing. So now they're going a week later, so school starts on August 12th. So there's a gap there where there's not a lot of services available or activities available in that window.
You're not cutting your hours.
No, the hours are remaining the same as what they've been historically. It's just we don't have, with those reductions we had to make, there's not an opportunity to expand that service at the present time. We do keep roads and Skyline open on weekends through Memorial Day. But when you look at our fees and when we compare the fees and charges of our aquatics program to neighboring communities, we're right at that same level as them and of trying to make it affordable and still attract families and everybody to participate there. So I'm not sure there's an opportunity to really increase without being out of the market.
That's a great point. I mean, I'm very proud of our aquatics program. It's the best. But there is that awkward end of the summer downtime where you've got a week or two, and week now 2 weeks before school starts, where you've got kids and families that are kind of stuck without a place to go. You know, the public pool is there, but it's closed due to budgetary reasons. So it'd be nice to try to figure out a solution to that. And I understand it's all about money, but it seems odd, you know, the first week of August that our pools are shut down and we can't get the kids that are, you know, they've got a week or two to kill before they go back to school. It'd be nice to have the pools open. Yeah.
It's a 2.5 on.
Yeah. So.
Let us go. I don't know. Do you know what that number looks like?
Not off the top of my head, but I can provide it to you.
Again, Council, it's like everything that you're seeing is happening in the parks budget. There's a lot of projects we want to get out there. A lot of projects we didn't even mention that need to be done. I know Vice Mayor has some projects, some other parks projects that would be wonderful to do. And it's, frankly, on the capital side, we've got the funding to build out more parks. But as you're seeing, even on pools, our struggle is the operating side. That's where it really is unfortunate for us because the community has supported us in giving us the dollars to build parks and build pools, but the economy hasn't supported it on the operations side. And so that's why we're having to delay projects. And frankly, we're delaying them with the hopes that the economy is improving as we hope, because then that brings in the additional revenue. So it then becomes a choice too. If we add more hours, then something else eventually gives, or then we're choosing not to do something else. I don't know what that is, but let us at least tell you what the cost is and we can look at that and make that discussion. Listen, if we're up to us, we're up to Mark, he'd be building everything all at once and getting them open tomorrow. So we understand that it's our challenges meeting. We don't want to open something we can't maintain and we can't operate, because then it does affect the experience. So let's at least come up with a number.
I know, and I don't mean to be. I want to be very complimentary, but I just. On the other hand, for example, we got the Mesa High School park are opening with the great water features and the lazy river and everything. I wonder if we could just focus on one or two pools.
Be some regional pools
that have a lot of the amenities attached to them. The competitive program is over by then, so I don't think we need the neighborhood swim team function as much as we do just a place for families to go for that week or two.
And maybe we could pick, spread them out across the city, maybe, and find some that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Luna.
No, I just want to reinforce that because certainly you don't want kids that are bored. And if we can do something to mitigate that and having these opportunities, we really need to stress how important that is for our kids and our community.
Okay.
Yeah, Mayor, Council, I'll present some different options and scenarios to
Thank
the city
manager.
Thank
you very much, Mark. Great job.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're done with those staff presentations. Next item on the agenda is item 3, information pertaining to current job order contracting projects. Council, any questions? If not, moving on to item 4, acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Is there a motion? A motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Next item, hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Mr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to report on our District 3 pancake breakfast and flow rider competition. I really want to thank everybody who was involved. We actually had the highest attendance, I think, that we've ever had for a pancake breakfast. And I want to thank Mark and his staff, Carla Armfield and Mark Foote, managers at the Rhodes Aquatic Complex, that really made it special for the participants in the competition, as well as all the visitors. We had a very spirited surfing competition between police and fire, and police eked out a 2-point win. We want to compliment the coaches, Forrest Smith for the fire, and Eloy for the police department. Eloy also served as well. John Pombier was a great MC. And the teams did not throw him into the flow rider, so must have been fair competition. I also want to thank so many of the city departments showed up, department directors, and I think even a couple won raffle prizes. I think Tim Myers and Jody Sorrell won raffle prizes. So we had great sponsorships. Obviously, the firefighters cooking the breakfast, the Mesa Hilton coming along as well. And the Visit Mesa and Mesa Chamber were wonderful sponsors as well. So it was a great event. Many people think that now we should create another summer event, just another event for Mark. But to have an East Valley Invitational Public Safety Flow Rider competition, invite public safety teams from other cities to come up against Mesa's finest. Anyway, it could be a great opportunity to benefit organizations, for example, like either the 100 Club or the Mesa Public Safety Foundation. But that's my report from that breakfast.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a great event. And I don't want to create any enemies here, but I think the fire department got a little bit robbed on the scoring on that. I'm sorry, Eloy, but maybe I don't know. It was close, but if I had been one of the judges, I want you to know. Okay. I'll probably get ticketed as I cross the street now. All right. Mr. Brady, scheduling of meetings and general information. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Thompson. Thank you.
Frank McGray and I were able to spend the last 3 days in D.C. Attended the association, or is the American Public Gas Association. So it was their Government Affairs Committee meeting. And so we heard a lot of from the industry and from other municipalities about some of the issues that they're facing, that we are facing. A lot of it wrapped around DOE and their rulemaking and how it impacts really the consumer's choice when it comes to buying appliances and so forth, and really could impact us as well on that piece, but also on the financing, tax-free financing on bonds and so forth that we use on capital projects. So we were able to spend about a day and a half talking about that, and then the other day and a half we were advocating for Mesa with our delegation and Arizona delegation at the at the Capitol. So kudos to Frank. He did a great job, I think, of talking and putting those talking points together for us to advocate. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good report. Mr. Richens.
I just wanted to mention that the new Sheraton at Riverview is open, and the restaurants are open. They have a place there called Legend Steak. It's open. We walked around last night and looked at the facility. It's really beautiful. It's a nice addition to Mesa, and my children were thrilled to count 5 pools out in the back area. But Legend Steak and the sports bar, Stats. Legend Steak is the steakhouse. Stats is the sports bar. Need customers. They need to practice on someone. I'm going to go there, I think, on Saturday night for dinner. So, but yeah, hearing good things for those who have attended. So, don't mean to do a commercial plug, but it was a pretty significant project as part of the whole Cubs development review park. So, congratulations to Bob Yost. And from what I understand, they're picking up the crews and moving down a few feet and adding 75 more rooms. So. The staff there is telling me that they already hosted their first event in the convention area, and it went really smoothly, so they're really happy. The only struggle they're having is you can't find them on Google, so people are having a hard time finding their actual location. So we'll throw the gauntlet down to our IT department and Mark Garcia to see if they can't solve that problem for them. Thanks.
I think a commercial for the Sheraton is very appropriate. It's fantastic. We're going to steal a ton of business from Scottsdale with that. But it's a Scottsdale-style resort. If it's going to be a great staycation location for people in Mesa. So that's right, over by Gateway Airport. Okay, thank you, Council. Any other reports? If not, Mr. Brady, let's talk about scheduling of meetings and general information.
Thank you, Mayor. We also want to invite everyone to come join Councilor Luna at his next Luna Landing for a free pancake breakfast this Saturday, May 2nd. From 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. at Fire Station 214, which is located at 5950 East Virginia Street. And then our next council meeting will be Monday, May 4th. Thank you.
Thank you. Council, if there's no other business, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned.